In the United Methodist Church, there are certain days that are set aside for certain things. And actually, this Sunday is Organ Donor Sunday. You know, some of the Sundays we celebrate and some of them we just pass on by. But I felt like this one was an important one for us to celebrate. We do have those among us that have had their lives saved and transformed because of organ donation. Our very own Randy Holman had a liver transplant in 2009, and we're delighted that he's here with us today. So. There may be others that I'm unaware of that have been touched in our fellowship of our family of believers. I know our family has been impacted tremendously. I have a great nephew who is the youngest heart transplant patient. He had a heart transplant at 1 week old, and is doing well. He's 9 years old now. And I've been touched by organ donation also. And so someday I'll share my God story with you about that. But particularly today, have a guest that wanted to invite her to come. And I will just tell you before I introduce her that we have brochures about Donate Life. If it's something that you're interested in that you can get information for out in the Northex. You'll hear a little bit about that, but more than that, you're just going to hear her beautiful testimony of how God used her and touched her life. And she's just fine. And so in a moment, I'm going to invite Beth Beathard to come. And she's here today with her husband, Gary. But she's going to be sharing with you her testimony. And some of you may have heard a tiny bit of her story probably about a year ago when I found out what all she had gone through in one of my sermon illustrations. I talked about her a little bit. But I was looking forward to the day when she could come and really share with you her God story of what God has done in her life. So in just a moment, I'm going to invite her to come. But first, allow me to read our scripture for today, which is from the 23rd Psalm, and it's one that you know well. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in the paths of righteousness for His name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for You are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup runs over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. This is the word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. Beth.
Good morning. Thank you for inviting me to speak here today. I'm very glad to be here, literally. Glad to be standing here. My heart transplant story is more than just about receiving a new heart, although that was a pretty big deal. I'd like to tell you how the most difficult experience of my life changed me for the better. Can I change the slide? There. Thank you. Can we dim the lights a little bit? In March of 2007, I had the first of many heart events when my heart started to race out of control at work. By the time I reached the emergency room at Presbyterian Health Dallas, my heart rate was 185. I really didn't realize how serious it was until the doctor on call calmly told me that she needed to put me to sleep and restart or cardiovert my heart. I started crying and asked her if I could please call my husband, Gary, who was out of town on business. Needless to say, she didn't let me call anyone. So I woke up to find my boss, Tracy Ann, and our senior pastor holding my hands. That was the first time my life was saved. My diagnosis was dilated cardiomyopathy and ventricular tachycardia. Dilated cardiomyopathy basically means an enlarged heart. So the pumping capacity of my heart was only 35%. Normal is 65 to 70. So I was very tired. The more serious problem was ventricular tachycardia, which involves the electrical system of the heart. It originates from the bottom chambers and can be fatal. So I had to have a defibrillator implanted in my chest that would detect the arrhythmia when it reached a danger level and shocked my heart back into rhythm. My medical treatment over the next 18 months included multiple medications, a second more powerful defibrillator, and 4 cardiac ablations. Now, ablation in the heart basically means they map out the electrical circuit of the heart and find the short that's causing the problem, and they zap it or burn it. So I had 4 of those. This was done to try to fix the VT, the ventricular tachycardia problem, which kept making my defibrillator go off because it kept going off. Unfortunately, at this time, the success rate was only 20%, so it wasn't working. Part of my treatment was in a Houston hospital twice after my cardiologist decided that the physicians there were more experienced with my type of arrhythmia. The second time, I was transported there on a care flight helicopter. I was in shock by the time I arrived, shaking. And the defibrillator, it fired a total of 7 times. Not a pleasant experience at all. But again, saving my life 7 more times. So now we're up to 8 times that my life was saved. My husband, Gary, and I were in the ICU and the hospital more than we were home. I didn't even know where the front door of Presbyterian Dallas was until years later, because I always entered through the emergency room. Did you know that Presbyterian Dallas cafeteria serves meatloaf on Tuesdays? Gary knew that. In fact, he knew what they served every day of the week, because he spent all 12 weeks of his vacation over a 2-year period in the hospital with me. And when his vacation time ran out, he continued to work by my side, taking advantage of the good Wi-Fi in the hospital. Gary was and is a saint. My family, especially Gary, was having a more difficult time than I was. I firmly believe that a medical problem can be harder on the caregivers than the actual patient. I was being well taken care of. My husband and my family simply had to stand by and watch me slowly fade away. I was terrified. Depression, fear, and anxiety absolutely ruled my life. Various medications given to me to treat my anxiety, depression, and sleeping issues did not work. In fact, they made me worse. I was angry at God, and I thought He had abandoned me. One particular night, I lay in bed and I was struggling. I was laying in bed struggling to go to sleep, which I did most nights. I don't normally hear voices, but that night I clearly heard someone or somebody, something say, "Do you trust me?" My answer was no. I'm very stubborn. I still wanted to control everything, including when my defibrillator went off, like that was going to happen. I was actually making it worse, making myself stressed out. We had only been attending our church, First United Methodist Church of Richardson, a short time when I had my first heart event. The prayers and support we received from our church was incredible. Someone requested a prayer blanket for me, and an associate pastor brought it over to me one day. It was the beginning of a spiritual turning point as I held onto this blanket, comforted by the prayers of many. I even had it with me in the ICU. Gary's co-workers, our family, friends, and neighbors also were very supportive. There were churches from all over the country and people we didn't even know that were praying and sending me emails and cards. My cardiologist even prayed for me before she put me on the care flight helicopter. I worked at Perkins School of Theology. In fact, Keith and I used to work together in the admissions financial aid office. In fact, you will be surprised to know I worked up until 2 months before my transplant surgery. The only reason I could do this was that this wonderful community of faith allowed me to work when I could. I even took a nap in a faculty office during the day sometimes, and later from my bed at home with a computer. My job included finding financial aid for students, so I was pretty popular. One of those students came by one day and brought his guitar. He played a song he wrote called The Ventricular Tachycardia Blues. It was great. I needed that. I reached my lowest point during my second treatment in Houston. The hospital chaplain met with me several times, and I finally began to pray and reflect on certain scripture passages. I also reread all the many cards and emails I had received and began to think about how many people were praying for us. An image came to my mind, and I took out a scrap piece of paper and I drew this picture that was in my head. And this was in the cardiac ICU. This is the picture I drew. And I'm a much better musician than I am an artist, but obviously it's an heart, and the stick people on either side are all the people that were praying for me. The hands at the bottom are God's hands that was holding me together, and all the prayer was I saw that as all the prayer was mending my heart back together. So I kept that in my Bible for years and finally had it framed. You know the song, Into My Heart? Into my heart, into my heart. God came into my heart that day, although he'd never left. I realized that he had not abandoned me at all, but was there the whole time, holding me up and ministering to me through all of the many people who prayed and cared for us. That was when the emotional and spiritual healing began for me. I was finally released from the Houston Hospital in March of 2008 and returned home. While still very ill, I knew God was with me. I began to pray through reading the Bible. The Psalms especially were the most comforting to me because I had no words to pray, so I turned to the Psalms and used those as my words to pray. Psalm 23 was one of my favorites. Verse 2, while lying down, which is all I could do, I couldn't even get out of bed, the only place I could look was up at God. Still waters, I could be still, and I could pray. And I was walking through that valley of the shadow of death many times. So I began to repeat to myself, I shall fear no evil. I shall not fear. Psalm 46:10. I meditated and repeated this particular verse many times in order just to calm down. But I changed the word slightly to read, be still and know that you are God. Because when I said it out loud, I'd say, be still and I am God. And I had trouble with control, and I'm not God. So I would say, be still, you are God, or just be still, trying to relax, trying to calm down. I also pleaded with God through several of the Psalms of lament, hoping and praying for healing. As a musician, music was a huge part of my recovery. I became my own music therapist and designed a CD to help me relax. Some of the music on that CD were recordings of me playing the oboe. I did that on purpose to give me hope that someday I might be well enough to play again. It did not happen overnight, but gradually an overwhelming sense of calm, peaceful serenity became a part of my heart and my soul. I accepted the fact that I might not make it and trusted God completely. I never got better, only worse. Remember my ejection fraction of 35%? Well, it was down to 20 and dropping. My cardiologist informed me that I was not going to survive without a heart transplant. So I was moved to another hospital and evaluated at Medical City Dallas, and evaluated, which is quite a process, as you know. And I was accepted. My new transplant cardiologist put in a PICC line for IV medication, which basically kept my heart pumping, hopefully long enough to get a heart. I was sent home to wait, prayerfully. I did not have much time left. If there is a silver lining to getting worse, it was that it bumped me up on the transplant list, on the national transplant waiting list. My clinic began to receive what they call offers of hearts for me that were, my name came up on the list. But they turned down several of those offers because they wanted to wait for a more perfect match for me to avoid rejection in the long run. At 6:30 a.m. on November the 7th, 2008, our phone rang. I had had trouble sleeping the night before, so I was propped up in the living room recliner, and I'd also taken a Tylenol PM, so I was I'm a lightweight with medicine, so I was kind of sedated, and the phone was ringing, and the bag containing my IV medication with this really long tubing was all tangled around the chair, and I couldn't get out of the chair, and I knew what the phone call was. So I yelled for Gary, who was getting ready for work, to answer the phone, answer the phone. And it was our cardiologist giving us the very good news that there was a heart for me. The even better news was that the donor's heart was almost a perfect match. 21 out of 25 antigen antibody markers were a direct match, which is outstanding. The actual transplant surgery, and I was not nervous at all going into the surgery, was pretty uneventful. It only lasted 2.5 hours. I woke up in the cardiac ICU with my family all around me. They were all saying how much color I had in my face. And I'll let Gary tell you what he said to me.
I took one look at her and said, "Dang, I didn't realize how awful you looked all this time."
I was trying not to laugh. My chest had just been cut open. I woke up and I felt wonderful right away, and was totally overwhelmed with gratitude and joy. 6 hours after surgery, I was sitting in a chair pedaling a stationary bike. I went home 1 week later, after only waiting 30 days for a new heart, which is very unusual. We're very blessed. I am alive today because of the grace of God, exceptional medical professionals, and most importantly, my heart donor. Her name was Catherine, and she was only 23 years old. Catherine had 3 children under the age of 5, and she died of a massive stroke. She had not signed up to be an organ donor, so her mom and her husband made that very, very difficult decision to donate her organs. She saved my life. She saved 3 other people besides me by donating her lungs, her liver, and her kidneys. We will always be grateful for this precious gift. We met Catherine's mother the year following my surgery, which is a really great story. I'll have to share it another time or later. Every year around my heart anniversary, which was actually last Tuesday, Gary and I placed 12 red roses on the altar of our church in memory of Catherine. And this picture was taken on my 5th anniversary. Go back to the pictures of the flowers. The picture of the flowers was taken on my 5th anniversary last Tuesday. Thank you. Last Tuesday was actually my 8th heart anniversary. Now go up one. Organ donation should be a personal and informed decision. If you are an organ donor, I thank you. If you are not, please consider becoming one. I will not be going into any details because of time, but of course I'll be available later if you have any questions. Earlier I mentioned that my life had been saved a total of 8 times, once in the ER and 7 times with the defibrillator going off. So with my new heart, we were up to 9 times that my life was saved. So I decided that I was either a cat with 9 lives or that God really had a plan for my life. And He did. I'd like to show you a couple of pictures of me before and after. This was taken 1 month after my first heart event with my sister, my mom, and my aunt. And you can see how pale I am there. The next slide is when our son got married. That was 2 months before my surgery. The next slide is 2 weeks after my heart transplant on Thanksgiving Day. And you can see all the color in my face. So the next slide is before and after, and you can see quite a difference there. Physically, I was on the road to recovery and happy to be alive. Emotionally, I still had some major work to do. I had had some emotional trouble before my heart started failing, so the extreme trauma of what I went through only made things worse. I knew I'd been given a second chance at living life differently and wanted to make those changes. It was another very hard journey, but by the grace of God, a lot of personal prayer, and the help of others, I did make some drastic changes in my personal life. My new heart is nothing short of miraculous. Like I said, we just celebrated my 8th heart anniversary last Tuesday. I have had no rejection episodes at all and just see my doctors every 6 months for just follow-ups. They test for rejection by actually taking biopsies of the heart, and periodically I have to have those. But the good news is I'm doing so well that I don't have to have a biopsy for another 2 years, which is really good. My pumping capacity, ejection fraction of my new heart is normal. 65% to 70%. I have no restrictions. I can do anything. I am on a minimal dosage of 2 anti-rejection drugs that I will take for the rest of my life, which is no big deal. My body is suppressed, immunosuppressed because of those drugs, so I can get sick very easily. Thankfully, I've only been ill 3 times in the last 8 years, and it was minor. We vacationed in Lake Tahoe and Yosemite National Park this past summer, and I was thrilled to be able to hike to waterfalls at an altitude of 10,000 feet, which I never could have done before. And I went parasailing 500 feet above a boat above Lake Tahoe. I have no fear of anything anymore. That's Yosemite. I am grateful. I'm thankful for living. I'm just grateful that I'm alive and breathing. Anything else in my life is an added bonus. I'm grateful to God, to Catherine, and her family for saving my life. I'm grateful for Gary, who cared and loved me during the very worst of times. For family, friends, and all of the many, many people who prayed for us. I'm thankful that I can hold this precious little girl who's our first granddaughter. And there's another one on the way. I'm grateful that I have been able to celebrate 8 more anniversaries with the love of my life. I'm even thankful for birthdays and getting older and wrinkles. Because there was a time I didn't know if I'd live to see another day. So I'm glad I'm getting older. In fact, I turned 60 just a few weeks ago, and I'm thrilled. Actually, I'm only 46 because I average my donor heart's age with my real age. So So, no wonder I look so good. I have a young heart. I'm grateful for the little things I could not do before, like doing laundry, cooking dinner, unloading the dishwasher, taking a shower without fainting, which I did. I am even grateful for the migraine headaches that I get sometimes as a side effect of my medications. I am grateful for every moment of every day. What we went through was very, very difficult. But I can honestly say that I am grateful that it happened to me. I thank God for this struggle, which ultimately taught me how to live, really live. So God did have a plan for me. To honor the life of my donor by living life to the fullest, to give back to others through my music and other ways. It was not my time to die, and I intend on making the most of the bonus years that I have been blessed with. So my message to you is this: life is short. It's precious. So enjoy each and every moment. Celebrate that you are alive. Pray. Give to others and be grateful for God's blessings in your life. Practice thankful living, or what I like to call thanks living. Gary and I are going to close our time together with some music. For those of you that don't know, we're going to play oboe and piano. We're going to play two short pieces. The oboe requires an incredible amount of air to play. So part of my recovery was lung strength, gaining that. And to us, our music is much more than just playing the notes on a page. It's an expression of our gratitude to God for life, for health, and for my heart donor. Thank you.
What a beautiful witness to God and to trusting in the Lord and recognizing how wonderful our lives are. You know, often we take life for granted. And maybe it's worth it to go through something really difficult to realize how precious each day is.